Today's episode of Darkness Radio is brought to you by HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. Go to HelloFresh.com/darkness65 and use code darkness65 for 65% off plus free shipping. Welcome in, everybody, to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Excited about today's show, and I'll tell you why. We talk a lot about different cultures on the show. We talk a lot about different beliefs on the show. And today we're going to try and bust some beliefs on this show. We've got a special guest today. We've got La Carmina in today. We're going to talk a little bit about Satanism. And I know it's a little controversial on some fronts. And I know some people in our audience may think, well, wait a minute. You know, what exactly are we getting into today? And you know what? We're going to look at in an honest front at Satanism. We're going to take a look at Satanism and see what exactly it is and what it isn't. And we're going to bust some of those myths about what exactly Satanism is with La Carmina. La Carmina is the author of a brand new book that's out there right now, which is called The Little Book of Satanism. And we're going to talk to her about that book and why she put that book out, especially now. Let's face it, it's the season to put it out there. But why the need to put the book out there and why the need to explain the meaning behind Satanism, or why the need to put that information out there, especially since you would think in this day and age we would be somewhat enlightened, and why we aren't more enlightened as a society. We'll talk about that as well today. Let's get to know La Carmina a little bit. She's an award-winning alternative travel, culture, fashion blogger, author of three books, including the one we'll be talking about today, journalist, been in the Sunday Times and CNN, a TV host on Discovery, National Geographic, Travel Channel. She's also a TEDx speaker and appears on many, many other programs. You may have seen her on programs like The Doctors. I've run into her on many, many different programs. Let's bring her in now and welcome her to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Good evening, La Carmina. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing great.
It's interesting that people have kind of a stigmatism, and let's talk about that first, about what exactly Satanism is, and we'll work our way, let's say, from the beginning of what people thought it is or think it is, and then we'll work our way forward. Why do you suppose, even in this day and age, in 2022, people have the idea of what they think Satanism is, and why we haven't progressed past what we think it is?
Sure. So I think probably the majority of people have a negative knee-jerk reaction to the idea of Satanism or who Satanists are. I think there's this idea that they're bad people or engaging in evil behavior, or even more extreme views like worshiping the devil or sacrificing babies or something like that. But I mean, I think the more moderate position is people don't really understand Satanism as a religion and think it's either a fake religion or something that has nefarious means and intentions. And that's long, long, long been held throughout history. My book, The Little Book of Satanism, really goes throughout the historical events from the Middle Ages, actually from the time of the Bible, when the devil made his debut, throughout the Middle Ages and throughout all the centuries. And we see that during all this time, people have been falsely accused of being Satanists and unjustly persecuted, put to trial, and just because they were different or minorities in some way. And that leads to today with modern Satanism, where people are taking back the label and proudly self-identifying as Satanists, as non-theists, so not believing in any supernatural power, not believing in an actual devil, but taking strength in the metaphor of the devil as someone who's willing to rebel and question authority and think for himself.
What's interesting about your book, The Little Book of Satanism, is immediately at the beginning of the book, Lucian Graves, the founder of the Satanic Temple, is got the foreword in this book, and he really has quite an eloquent foreword in mm-hmm. the book, and really puts together an eloquent case for what Satanism is and what it isn't, and tries to put together a case, at least for what the Satanic Temple's version of Satanism is. Explain to me what the difference is, like, say, what the Satanic Temple's version of Satanism is, as opposed to if you're a follower of Anton LaVey.
Sure. And I should also acknowledge there are other Satanists out there today that are independently affiliated. So they do their own practice, or maybe they belong to small community groups, mm-hmm. or, you know, there are even theistic Satanists out there that do believe in some form of the devil, but the majority are non-theistic, and a great deal these days find association with the ideas of the Satanic Temple, which started out in 2013. And their take on Satanism, unlike the Church of Satan and some other groups, is that there's social political engagement. So the temple, they launch campaigns and they do all sorts of initiatives, from local food and clothing drives to lawsuits to uphold the separation of church and state and to protect the reproductive rights of their members by claiming religious exemption. If people can say, oh, because I'm a Christian or some other member of a religion, I can be exempt to this law, then why can't Satanists say the same thing? So I think that's a really unique part of what they do. And my book goes through the seven tenets that are real humanistic and democratic values that are uphold the main principles of the Satanic Temple, including scientific skepticism, upholding bodily autonomy and compassion and whatnot.
Which is interesting in itself. You know, it seems like we hear more and more, we hear that the Satanic Temple is coming forward in different political battles, and in that, political battles that have to do with, as you're putting it, autonomous rights, in rights in which, what's a good way of putting this, Carmina? In battles in which there definitely needs to be a separation between church and state.
Yeah, there's a lot of theocratic encroachment into politics, such as people putting up Christian crosses in public memorial grounds or putting up a Ten Commandments statue in public Capitol grounds. But these should be secular spaces as established by the U.S. Constitution, right? And they should be grounds that are open to all religious groups to put up their monuments. And so if someone puts up a Christian monument and then the Satanic Temple challenges it and says, hey, you know, if we really do believe in separation of church and state, then we should be able to put up our goat-headed Baphomet. But that isn't the case. They're always pushback and they're not allowed to put it up. So that really raises questions into is America really a secular nation as it should be, or is it kind of becoming a Christian nation, or are the rules applied equally to every group? And often the answer is no.
Now, when that's done, and I think people, the minute that that's brought up, or the minute that the Satanic Temple throws that objection out there, some people look at it as an affront. Some people look at it as maybe it might be done in jest. Some people look at it as maybe it might be thrown out as a joke. How do you see it when the Satanic Temple puts that sort of lawsuit or challenge out there to let's say, like a lawsuit to something like that, How do you look? I'm not forming words very well right now, Carmina, but
I get it. I think a lot of people, they think, oh, it's just they're playing a troll, they're pranking right? They're not taking it seriously.
Yeah.
But I think if my book really goes through the rich and deep history that informs the sincerely held beliefs of Satanists today, including those in the Satanic Temple. And these aren't arbitrary. We're not just, it's not a flying spaghetti monster type thing that's created out of nowhere, but there's actually a real rich historical backdrop of people being deemed, you know, devil worshippers in the past and persecuted, and the all these movements like Romantic Satanism that inform the sincere beliefs and values of Satanists today. So I would say that, you know, at first glance, maybe people think, oh, it's funny and it's just a prank. And yeah, it is funny, but it's a lot more than that. If you get to know the community and how the tenets really mean something to them, and how there's all these aspects of a real organized, genuine religion, like communities and congregations and local good works and all that. So it seems to me like it's earnest. It's not just a joke.
What I think what confuses people, because, you know, there are such things under the Satanic Temple as after school programs, as you've mentioned, there's things there that are good programs in the community. I think what might confuse people is they've heard the LaVey type and Crowley type sayings of do what thou will, and they have that idea that Satanism is a self-contained, more of a selfish outlook on life. And I think to hear that, if they hear that the Satanic Temple is actually a form of community and does things for the community and mm-hmm. has an outreach to the community, that's a little bit different. And
yeah, and also elevating the self doesn't have to mean selfish. It doesn't mean you're just looking out for yourself only. It may mean individuality and having freedom of expression and being willing to express yourself, even if other people might deem you a sinner because maybe of your sexual orientation or the way your lifestyle is. It's like, no, this is my free self-expression. I'm not harming anyone. So to be able to come to your fullest expression of self and live your best life, as they say, I think is a very much a positive value.
Don't take this wrong, Carmina, by any means. I'm just, you're going to laugh when I tell you this. I'm just playing devil's advocate here. but when someone who plays the other side, someone who's maybe extremely Christian, sees this and sees someone from the Satanic Temple in the community trying to do the same works that they're doing, but they're playing for the other side, so to speak, should they be one to question your motives? Should they be one saying, well, why are they doing the same thing they're doing, but I'm doing it in the name of the Lord and they're doing it in the name of Satan, but I don't get why they're doing that, because that's not supposedly what Satan does?
Right. Well, I guess that there's the misunderstanding there. It isn't done in the name of Satan, right? It's but also Satan is not always seen as a negative character. He's also seen as a positive force. And there's a historical basis for that. If you look at how the Romantic writers upheld Lucifer by rereading him as this heroic figure, almost like Greek hero who's willing to stand up against tyranny. And so in that sense, Satan, he has many forms. And my book goes through how he's depicted in art and in literature and how it's always changing. So I think if the main reaction is, oh, these Satanists aren't, they're bad, or, you know, doing something under Satan's banner is a bad thing. Well, I would say, maybe just get to know what their actual values are and get to know the history. And I should say that actually a lot of Christians really that get to know what Satanists do support them. You see a lot of people speaking out from Christian and other faiths for what Satanists are doing.
So I would ask you this, Carmina, as someone who is a non-theistic Satanist, when you go to, I'll put this in a dogmatic perspective. Okay. I take it there's probably not services every Sunday, or anything like that, or is there? Am I stretching here?
Actually, every Tuesday there are online services for the Satanic Temple, if we're just speaking about them.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so are we portraying, are we praying to Lucifer? Are we portraying Lucifer much like the Lucifer you just spoke of, kind of the pre, you know, the light bearer more, or are we, how are we looking at Satan or Lucifer? I take it it's not the guy with the red horns who's poking people with a pitchfork.
Yeah, well, I would say the focus isn't even on Satan. There's no praying to Satan, or you know, even so much a reverence for the character. It's more, this is the guiding principle, the light bearer. Sorry about that. Mm-hmm. Like taking inspiration from what Satan stands for.
Okay. I know I sound like I'm asking naive questions, and maybe I'm poking around like a 5-year-old here, but you know, I think there's so many things for the layperson to weed through, and I know there's a lot, and there's a reason for people to pick up the book. I mean, you know, and again, I may have some people who are Christians in my audience who are going, why should I pick up a book on Satanism? Why should I pick up this little book of Satanism? And the name of the book, folks, is A Little Book of Satanism, A Guide to Satanic History, Culture, and Wisdom. La Carmina is our guest. And we'll have a link to the book in the description of this program. And the reason being is this, and La Carmina does a wonderful job of putting out the historical Satanism out there, from the Middle Ages to the early 20th century to modern Satanism to Satanism today, and kind of going through the ages and then bringing it to today and then explaining where everything is and where it sits and where it comes to the Satanic Temple today. You know, and I think we're all kind of guilty of wanting to turn a blind eye. And let me hit this from a psychological point with you, Carmina, for a second. I think because we're, you know, for the most part, we have an issue. We try to tell ourselves we're accepting as a people, especially as Americans. We're told, you know, we're accepting. We're an accepting people. We can accept anybody. But it's really hard when we're told, you know, there's people with black hats and white hats. And we like to think of ourselves as the people with the white hats. But when we see the people with the black hats, well, you know, even though they wear black hats, well, we can accept them. But do we really? You know, I think that's the question. Do we really?
Right.
And when it comes time to actually sit across from them and maybe break bread with them or even to have a conversation with them and talking a real conversation like you and I are having right now, not adversarial, just open-minded and asking questions, I don't think a lot of people can do it. What kind of conversations do you have on a daily basis with people when it comes to the just the subject of Satanism? Do you find they're more adversarial? Do you get a lot of open-minded people, just lay people who ask you open-minded questions about it?
You know, in fact, yes, I always get very open-minded perspectives, and I understand a lot of people don't have any knowledge of Satanism and where it comes from. So when I was writing the book, I made sure to have people who don't know anything, even about Gothic culture, or alternative culture, or let alone Satanism, read it, so that I could make sure that the book really answered any questions that they may have, even the most simple ones, like where does the idea of Satan come from? And what's the deal with the different names like Beelzebub and Mephistopheles? And what are all these incidents that led to Satanism today? And so I just hope that people do approach the book from that perspective where, you know, they can just see it as a book about any other religion that's lesser known, like Jainism or something like that, or Sikhism, that they may not necessarily know much about, and they're just willing to learn about it. And as something that does have historical roots and a long culture, and I think it's a fascinating topic.
It is fascinating indeed. You have a short bit about demonic possession and exorcisms in here. I may jump around a lot here, Carmina. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
You know, on this show, one of the things that really seems to draw people in are the things that get people's ears burning and get them really listening is demonic possession and exorcisms. And one of the things that people really tune into is things about demons. And there seems to be two camps when it comes to the paranormal. That is that they strongly believe in demons and the demonic. And there seems to be the camp that says there's no such thing as demons. And I'm curious, as a Satanist, do you believe that there are demons, one, and do you believe that they truly come from a satanic force?
So I'm an atheist through and throughout, and unlike most non-theistic Satanists, people don't believe in supernatural or in any elements that cannot be explained by science as we know it. Mm-hmm. So the idea to me of demons or some sort of force that cannot be explained through science doesn't resonate with me. So I personally don't think there's something of a concept of demons out there, but I do see where it comes from. And just going through the history of how the devil became who he is today, you see that there are elements in the past, centuries and upon centuries ago, people couldn't explain the phenomena around them. And so they would create stories of, oh, there are these evil forces out there that are causing malice and causing these things we can't explain, like earthquakes or diseases. And then that kind of, you see that throughout history with the gods that created, that were predecessors to the devil and really informed how he looked and stories about him, like ancient Egyptian gods of the underworld and Pan, the pastoral god in Greek mythology. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I personally, and most Satanists don't think there are actually spirits or demons out there that we can't explain, but certainly there are still forces that, you know, I think the idea is really, people are so drawn to the idea because there's still so much we don't know about and can't explain.
Would you allow me to go down that road? Do you say you're an atheist?
Oh, yeah, I'm an atheist.
Okay. Can I ask you some questions about that personal question?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I'm always curious because I think we all flirt with that for a bit, I think, at least in our spiritual journey. Of the fact that what if there isn't? What if there isn't anything out there? And I know as we think about that, what if we die and we're nothing but worm food at the end? And the thought is absolutely frightening. So I have to ask you, Carmina, I mean, does it frighten you? Does it frighten you that at the end there's nothing there?
No, it actually sounds great to me.
It does, really?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I'd want to keep continuing over and over and to all these realms or whatever ideas other religions might have. I kind of think that, you know, everyone has just a really short time here and we make the best of it and that's it. And if we look perspective-wise, I mean, the planets are so many millions of years old and people, even humanity, has only been around for a blip. So I think each individual life, sometimes we put too much importance or thought into it when it's really just a blip of a blip.
Hmm. So with that being said, knowing that, you know, that everything is such short time is such, you know, it has such a finite amount that decisions need to be made quickly, that you need to move at such a brisk pace in order to get things done. Does that affect how you live your life?
I would say yes. I would absolutely say that. I think all of us have more limited time than we might think, just because anything can happen. Health stuff can happen. Surprises can happen. And I think if we want to do things now, then now is the only time we have. I think the world is not going in a good place, in a good direction too, like with politics and climate. So I think people may not even realize we have even more limited time than we may think in order to do certain things, whether it's travel or see people or pursue certain passions. So I think, yeah, I think that's something people sometimes find difficult to think about. But to me, it spurs me to say yes and to do the things now.
Is it necessarily healthier to be ruled by factors, outside factors and passions, than it is to be ruled by inner discipline? Or is there something within Satanism that says, you know what, you still need to have the inner discipline while pursuing passions?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a sense of Epicureanism. And you see that in the Satanic Bible and Anton LaVey's writing, whereas, yes, you should indulge, right? And without guilt, if you're, let's just talking about food, you know, I was just in Japan, so I'm indulging, I'm enjoying food with friends and making the most of it and not feeling guilty about it. But then there's always a balance, right? So I come back and I'm eating clean again. And I'm not out eating out every day and eating always like that. So it's a sense of Epicureanism, of balance, where you can indulge and enjoy, but also not damage your body and not succumb to destructive forces like addiction.
You know, you bring up an interesting word there. And you know what? We're going to stop. We're going to take our break. When we come back, I want to bring up addiction and a word that's associated with addiction. And again, I'm going to come back to that D word, demon. When we come back, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about addiction and demons and things that may be out of our control. And do we necessarily have control over that? Or is that something that we blame on something else, or can we control it? And I want to see where that perspective is in Satanism. Our guest is La Carmina. The name of the book is The Little Book of Satanism. We have a link to it in the description of this program. And again, fascinating stuff. I tell you, I got the privilege to be able to read it before we sat down today, lots of good stuff in here, folks, to sit and read about. And if you want to kind of open your eyes to a new perspective and read about another culture, I always am fascinated about reading about other cultures and other people's perspectives. This is one of those books where you can sit and read and check out another culture. And I encourage you to if anything, take a little field trip. And read this book, The Little Book of Satanism, A Guide to Satanic History, Culture, and Wisdom. Again, the link is in the description of this show. La Carmina is our guest. When we come back, we'll talk about addiction and how the Satanic Temple looks at addiction and how you treat it. If you don't have a higher power in which to go through the steps, that's part of the program. We'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. Welcome back to the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm Tim Dennis. Our guest is La Carmina. The book is called The Little Book of Satanism, A Guide to Satanic History, Culture, and Wisdom. La Carmina is our guest. She's also the author of that book. Before the break, Carmina, we were talking about addiction. And I have a curious question at this. You know, when we treat addiction, we talk about 12-step programs. We talk about praying to a higher power. It doesn't necessarily need to be God, Jesus, Buddha, whoever. It could be a pet rock if you need it to be. It just needs to be something you pray to. If we're talking about Satanism or the Satanic Temple's version of it, and it's non-theistic or if it's atheistic, how does a Satanist get through a 12-step program if they become addicted to something?
Yeah, well, it's great that you bring this up. So the Satanic Temple has something called Sober Faction, and that is their own sobriety program that doesn't have anything to do with a higher power or anything to do with supernatural or having to, you know, any religious elements in there. Because even if a program like AA, a 12-step program, they say, oh, your higher power can be a pet rock, it's still talking about a higher power. And so Sober Faction is something that doesn't have that in there at all. There isn't the element of having to bend your knee to some higher power, or it's rather thinking for yourself and working on it for yourself. And it's open to anyone who aligns with these values. So people who are also non-theists and align with the tenets of the Satanic Temple. So it's not just for Satanists. But I just think it's a really cool program to have, and it will meet the requirements for court-mandated sobriety programs that are sometimes required. So it's a great alternative to the for those who don't feel comfortable with the kind of inserted spirituality of other 12-step programs.
Interestingly enough, in the foreword, Lucian mentioned that it wasn't until 2019, I believe it was, that was the U.S. government recognized the tax status of the Satanic Temple as a religion, a full religion, correct?
I'm not sure if it's 2019, but yeah, something like that.
I'm sorry. I know it was in the 2010s. It might not have been 19. It might have been 13. I might have my numbers mixed up. But I know it's been a long fight for the Satanic Temple itself to get recognized. I know that too with the Church of Satan. It's been the same way. They had their fight in there as well. I know that the negative connotation has been there for quite a long time, and I'm leading up to a different question here and switching gears a little bit. And I'm going to kind of switch gears a little bit into not only Satanic Panic, but a little bit into Satanic serial killers, which you will also bring up in the book. It seems like every time there is a little bit of a flash in the news about a killing or a mass killing, there seems to be a hint of Satanism in there, or there seems to be a tip of the cap to Satan or Lucifer in there. Tell me a little bit about, in the book you talk about the biggest misconception about Satanism is that, you know, it's the favorite doctrine of notorious serial killers. Why is it that Satan is held hand in hand with serial killers?
Right. So I would say in the chapter, I go through in the popular imagination, there are certain people, serial killers that are associated with Satanism, like Charles Manson or Richard Ramirez. And if you actually look at it, these aren't people who are really at the affirmative values of Satanists, but they're just people who have a lot of, who are just, you know, maybe drawing pentagrams or have the Satanic Bible on them and spouting these ideas out of provocation. But if you actually look into it, it's really the media often that conflagrates it. And they would call, for example, Charles Manson and his family Satan's hippies, but there's actually nothing in Manson's crazy beliefs and in their actions that point to them having anything to do with Satanism. So I think a lot of it is the media sensationalizing it, people seeing a pentagram or something and suddenly lobbing onto it and creating this narrative that was popular, especially in the Satanic Panic, that there are these killers out there and Satanism is their religion.
Yeah, the Satanic Panic, things really started to wrap up with cults out there. Michelle remembers that 1980 book that was co-authored by Dr. Lawrence Pazder. There were things out there that made people believe that things were going on with cults and with people being snatched up off the street. You had lyrics being backmasked in metal music, things that were I don't know how does the temple look at it as the whole Satanic Panic thing? Is that a great marketing tool, or is it something to be kind of scoffed at?
Oh, it's horrible. The Satanic Panic of the 80s and 90s still goes on today. It never ended. And it's led to so many innocents being accused of Satanism and even jailed and had their lives ruined. And even with things like Pizzagate, where a pizza parlor just out of nowhere was accused of hosting satanic democratic politicians engaging in ritual abuse. And that led to a gunman coming there and firing a shot inside the restaurant. So this narrative, it's not something to be taken lightly. It's pervasive. It has a long history just from all the propaganda throughout from the Middle Ages to beyond to this hoax that was perpetuated linking Freemasons to Satanists. And it continues to damage people's lives. It continues to be to spread all this misinformation.
What, now let me ask you about that. What is that link that keeps trying to be established between Freemasonry and Satanism? Why the continued force link between the two groups?
Yeah. And so, see, this is why a lot of these things are in the air in public consciousness, but people don't really know where it comes from. And that's why I hope my book helps people to dive into the history and say, oh, so these are the origins, and this is why these ideas are out there today. So in the case of Freemasons being linked to Satanists, in the 1890s, there was this French publisher and writer named Léo Taxil, or Taxil, and he wrote these books in order to make money that linked Satanism with Freemasons. He created all these narratives, really juicy books and narratives, and people, especially Catholics, they ate it up because they loved the story of how people were engaging in secret devil worship and controlling the workings of politics, this whole Illuminati aspect. And then the publisher, Léo Taxil, he himself went on stage eventually and announced, oh, it was all fake. I made it all up. But that didn't end it. These ideas were out there and they have repercussions. And that's why to this day we link Freemasons to Satanists.
Interesting. And the Freemasons haven't been able to shake it. It's one of those things where they themselves, I think, have suffered because of that. That same, I guess, reputation as well, and they have an issue with it as well. So it seems like both groups suffer, and that's unfortunate. You had mentioned those seven tenets, and I actually have them pulled up here in front of me of the Satanic Temple. The seven fundamental tenets. That it says here, if I can quote from it here, the Satanic Temple has seven fundamental tenets that uphold compassion, the fight for justice, and the inviolability of the body. Number one, one should strive to act with compassion and empathy toward all creatures in accordance with reason. Number two, the struggle for justice is an ongoing and necessary pursuit that should prevail over laws and institutions. Number three, one body is inviolable, subject to one's own will alone. Number four, the freedoms of others should be respected, including the freedom to offend. To willfully and unjustly encroach upon the freedoms of another is to forego one's own. Number five, belief should conform to one's best scientific understanding of the world. One should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit one's beliefs. That's an interesting tenet, especially with today's society. We'll get back to that here in a second. Number six, people are fallible. If one makes a mistake, one should do one's best to rectify it and resolve any harm that might have been caused. And number seven, every tenet is a guiding principle designed to inspire nobility in action and thought, the spirit of compassion, wisdom, and justice, I want to make sure I get that out correctly, and justice should always prevail over the written or spoken word. Let me get back to number five here for a second. Beliefs should conform to one's best scientific understanding of the world. One should take care never to distort scientific facts to fit one's belief. Carmina, it seems like in today's society, that's the one thing that they always do. Yeah. Someone's always distorting some sort of fact to fit their belief. And that seems to be a common thing in society these days. How is it that the Satanic Temple is the one that's going to remain true to science and report the facts correctly?
Right. It's so difficult, and especially in today's environment with fake news everywhere and constantly changing science. I mean, this COVID comes to mind. It's constantly changing the information we have about everything to do with it. So it's difficult. And that's part of the challenge, right? Rather than just going along with what one person says or what a religion says, thou shalt do this or shalt not. It's the thinking for yourself and really investigating and the materials, different sources, and thinking critically about everything around you. And that's not easy. And so that's something really, I think, that's great to strive for.
That it is. It seems like, yeah, I'll give you credit here. It seems like the tenets are pretty simple things, and they should be pretty simple things to follow. So even though they seem like they're pretty simple things to follow, how hard are they to follow?
I guess it depends on the individual and how you approach it. But I think that if someone lives a life in accordance with, you know, just like in science and what they said in empathy and in standing up for your rights to bodily autonomy. And also, I love the one about how people can be fallible and one should be able to be willing to admit if one's in error and to correct it. And I don't think these have to be hard things per se. I think, as I mentioned before, if you just think critically and think mindfully about your actions and the way you want to live your life, then all this should kind of come naturally.
I'm going to wade into some waters that may be, I don't know, maybe controversial to some people in the audience. I don't think it's controversial at all. And that's with the LGBTQ community. There are obviously some religions out there that are very biased against the community. I've never understood it for the life of me. I have close friends that are in the LGBTQ community. I love them to death. I don't get where we discriminate against somebody because of somebody they love, right? Love is love. Yeah. That's the way it's supposed to be, right? Tell me where Satanists have decided that, you know what, love is love. Where did that come in?
You know, you even see that with Anton LaVey and the Church of Satan. It's about how you should never make unwanted advances, so you shouldn't force yourself on anyone, but whatever the person, you know, whatever their sexual orientation or interests, whatever goes, if you're consenting and you're open to it. So you see that there with the Church of Satan, and you see that today with the Satanic Temple fighting for LGBTQ rights and, you know, just promoting... I love this idea of, like, you know, they always had Jesus loves you, these posters. But In fact, some people who, not all, but many people who follow Jesus would say, oh, but Jesus doesn't like a lot of people, like people in the gay community. But Satan loves everyone for who they are, is the joke.
Well, I always was of a mind that Jesus did love everybody. You know, yeah. I mean, that if God was the creator of all, wouldn't he love all of his children? You know,
right? Open to interpretation, though, depending on who you're speaking to. And so I just find that really interesting. And but in terms of Satanism, some of the most open-minded people I've met in Japan and around the world, and very much open and accepting of all people and perspectives.
Yeah, I that's the one. And I'll tell you, Carmina, you're talking to a guy who served for 3 years as an altar boy as a kid. And I've never gotten the interpretation that Jesus didn't love every single one of his flock.
Mm-hmm.
I that interpretation was never hit me in the head. I've never subscribe to that view.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so I have heard, you know, I was disappointed, and I'll just tell this story straight out. I was disappointed because my old church, I decided to, you know, kind of look in on mass one day, my old church. And there's a new priest at this church. And in his, in his sermon, he basically came out and he spoke badly of gay people in in his sermon, and it broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not in my world, that's not for him to judge. You know, maybe he feels that way personally. If that's how he feels personally, that's fine. That's his opinion. That's the way he feels. But it's not for him to preach that to his flock. That's just not, that's that, at least that's my opinion. Because the way that I was taught when I was younger was that God loves all his children. At least that's what I believe.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right. If God loves all his children, I guess Satan loves all of them as well. And if God won't take them, I guess Satan will. I don't know. You know, we're in the Halloween season. And there are certain things that get transferred to TV, movies, things that we see on the big screen. And in that, one of those things is satanic rituals, or the way that Satanists are portrayed on film. You know, I've got to ask you, as someone who's a member and a representative of the Satanic Temple, these rituals that are shown on film, these satanic rituals that are shown on film, first of all, they can't be anything like what you're doing in your own temple, are they? And second, how far off the mark are they? And what do you think of them?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of horror movies push this idea of, ooh, Satanists are engaging in these blood sacrifices and these evil rituals or invoking the devil. And that's not at all the case, just like most misconceptions. And I should also, some people may be surprised to hear that many Satanists do not engage in ritual practice at all. So this is certainly not something that's part of every satanic practice. But for people who do, it's for acts of self-empowerment. So my book kind of talks about some different rituals that Satanists might participate in, including ceremonies to burn leaves and get rid of negativity and bad forces in your life. So kind of a ritualistic aspect that can create meaning and motivation and empowerment for you to take action, as opposed to anything to do with the supernatural. There's no calling upon a spirit or believing something's being delivered or anything like that. Nothing that doesn't fit in with science. But these are, regardless, these types of rituals can be incredibly powerful and personal for people that do practice them, and lead to really positive benefits and motivational factors out there.
Maybe I'm still thinking in the esoteric supernatural vein. I still am thinking you guys get together on Tuesdays and you're talking in a spiritual sense, but you keep coming back to science. So what is it that you do on Tuesdays when you get together? Is it just punch and camaraderie, or what's going on?
Yeah, so it's great. So every Tuesday there are remote temple services that the Satanic Temple puts on, and they discuss a topic of the day. It could be anything to do with racial inequality to sobriety, to all these aspects. It could be just a person's personal journey and how their Satanism can help them to overcome it, or how it's helped them throughout their own evolution. And so it has not necessarily anything to do with God, you know, Satan or spirits or anything like that, but rather about people and ways that we can approach these difficult questions, and everyone can ask questions and kind of discuss it together.
So then that begs the question, what do you do for the holidays? Is there any holiday?
So there are some holidays that Satanists like to celebrate. But again, people may be surprised. There's nothing that's mandatory, or even, you know, you aren't a worse off Satanist if you don't celebrate them. These are very much, if they jive with who you are and what you want to do, then absolutely have fun and celebrate the occasions that have meaning for you. And these can be, of course, people love Halloween, but there's also Hexennacht, which is when historically the witches and the devil supposedly gathered on the mountain in Germany. And people might use that day to celebrate, well, it's the founding day of the Church of Satan, April 30th. Or people might also honor those that were victimized by superstition, such as those who were hunted as witches in the past on that day. So really, it's a very free-flowing, and that goes with the sense of individuality with Satanism. It's about choosing your own path and figuring it out for yourself.
Interesting. Okay. Now, with holidays also comes We're going to swing her back around to this too again, and we're of course dealing with atheism when we deal with this. Comes the actual death ritual or a funeral. What do you do in that situation? I mean, and let me ask you this, Carmina: have you thought about your own end? Have you thought about what do you do when it comes time for your end?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so for those who are atheists or Satanists, people think, oh, you know, it's not true that you don't have these important moments that you can celebrate, whether it's birth or weddings or memorials. And there's a whole background of satanic funerals, including one performed by Anton LaVey in the 1960s with a big wreath of Baphomet. And he said rites, last rites over the body, and metaphorically gave the soul to Satan, metaphorically, of course. But It was, yeah, I mean, people can have very meaningful gatherings and rituals to celebrate these important moments in life and death. Myself, you know, honestly, it's not something I have thought about. I don't know. It's just not something that's come to mind. I don't have this grandiose plan. It's maybe just not that important to me.
But eventually, I mean, it's going to come to that time, and someone's going to have to take care of your remains. I know it's kind of a morbid thing that we all have to tackle at one time or another. Is it something that, and maybe it's just something that, you know, when you, and again, it's not polite for a gentleman to ask a lady how old they are, but maybe, you know, something when you get to be of older age that you know, it becomes more concerning, or of an elder age, you know.
I guess so, or I just figured it's something that I won't be around for, so it's not something I really put much stock in, and, oh, I'll have this perfect funeral, this grand, gothic, fabulous funeral when I'm not there to enjoy it. So I'm here now to enjoy the things around me.
Well, would you look at it as more of a celebration for people that are around? Would you turn it into something that's more celebratory?
I guess so. I'd rather celebrate people now. And that's why when the pandemic kept us away from people, especially, I have so many friends in Japan and around the world. And so now I'm making up for it, and I'm making sure that I see the people I care about. It's about now for me.
Now, I do have a little bit of a question about, you know, about Japan and your background in Japan. Was it Andrew Zimmern you took over to Japan for Bizarre Foods?
Yes. Yeah. Now, among other TV shows.
Yeah. Now, see, Andrew Zimmern's one of our guys here in Minneapolis. I'm based out of Minneapolis. Tell me a little bit about the episode of Bizarre Foods you did with him, and a little bit of the fun you had with him. I saw the clip of the martini out of the severed head, which was kind of impressive. Yeah,
that was a great experience. So I spent a lot of time in Japan, especially when I started blogging on my La Carmina blog, and that kind of led to me writing books and all the things I do now. Mm-hmm. But blogging, I focused on Japanese pop culture, gothic culture, the alternative scene that's just so vibrant, including the small but vibrant satanic community in Japan. And so Andrew Zimmern's production team saw that I was writing about theme restaurants, which are these crazy fantasy cafes themed to be like Alice in Wonderland. You really feel like you're going through the Looking Glass, and the food is decorated like the Cheshire Cat, or, you know, a vampire cafe where you're served by vampires on top of a coffin. Oh. And so I wrote a book about that, and Andrew Zimmern wanted to check out these crazy, wacky theme restaurants. So I took him around for one of the TV segments for Bizarre Foods.
That's really cool. And now, is that still replaying on that episode? Have you seen it lately?
Bizarre Foods Tokyo. I always hear every now and then from people that said, oh yeah, I saw your episode on TV or streaming. So it's certainly out there.
Okay. Yeah. I'll definitely have to check it out again, because I love catching his shows from time to time. And you know, I mean, he's got a few shows out there now, a few different iterations of his show. But yeah, he's got one restaurant here in town I know of. I think he might even have a second one that he's open. And of course, he's out at the Minnesota State Fair. So he's definitely one of us, that's for sure. But yeah, I find it fascinating that, I mean, not only that you're doing the gothic culture stuff. But just yesterday, my co-host and I were talking about he's been to Japan. He's a pro wrestler, and who's wrestled in Japan. But he's also he and I both have a fascination with the country. So I've never been to Japan, but he's been. So he's been encouraging me. You got to go once in your lifetime. So. So it's, I just find it fascinating when I was perusing your bio and the different alternative cultures you've been exploring there in Japan. I found it really fascinating. So I just wanted to give the audience a little snapshot of what you're doing over there. So very interesting indeed. Let's talk a little bit about Satan throughout the history, just briefly here, Carmina, and where exactly Satan got his start. How is it that Satan works, other than Adam and Eve, obviously? That's where everybody thinks, well, of course, that's where, is that where Satan really got his debut, his big debut was Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden?
Oh, so that's another... I think that it's under the popular imagination, people think, oh, the serpent is Satan. But my book goes through how, in fact, originally the snake was just the snake. And it isn't until later that a lot of different legends and stories and interpretations added on these ideas about Satan. And so in the book about Satan's origins in the Bible, at first he's not even an individual character, but just the Satan, an opposer, someone who questions God. And then later on, he becomes this more full-fledged character that's the opponent of Christ. But if you just look at the Bible materials itself, there isn't much out there about what Satan looks like and what's his backstory. And that becomes filled in later through plays and medieval texts and interpretations, including the idea of Satan being, in fact, the snake that tempts Eve in the garden.
Interesting. Why do you suppose that there's not that much information about him? Is it because he is that tempting of a character? Is he is that strong of a villain type? Sometimes the villain is the kind of the spice of the story that draws the, or makes the hero look that much better. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's just a character, right? A metaphor. So whatever was in the Bible, which is where Satan originates from, is what it is, whatever was passed on throughout time. And so a lot of these ideas about Satan actually come through literature, through movies, through things like Paradise Lost, an interpretation of Satan as this beautiful rebel, or through Dante's Inferno, where he's stuck in the middle of the nine circles of hell, encased in the block of ice. So he's more of a powerless character there, to artistic depictions where he ranges from this scary looking, furry, cloven hoofed beast devouring souls to a beautiful young fallen angel. And so these ideas that we have, including from horror movies like Rosemary's Baby or The Exorcist, and from literature, they all kind of mix together in the popular imagination and create the devil as we know him today.
There's other characters too that seem to be rebellious, to say the least, but still get the evil tag, Lilith being one of them. Explain to us how the Satanic Temple looks at Lilith.
Oh, so there's no official interpretation or look at any of these characters, but a lot of people find affiliation with these metaphorical characters just because of their history and because of what they represent. So in terms of Lilith, who's a female demon in Judaic folklore, she's someone who's also a rebel. She refused to listen to her husband, or she became the consort of Satan. And so this is not a new thing, but in the late 19th century, there were writers that were hailing Lilith because of her independence and her willingness to be unabashed about her sexuality. So many people might now look at her as a positive symbol, but let's just say again, a symbol, not a real life being.
Interesting indeed. So again, when the Satanic Temple looks at Satan himself, are we're truly looking at just Lucifer the Lightbringer, or are we looking at the classic Satan character? I guess I'm a little confused. You're saying we're not really looking at anything. We're looking more at the attitude. Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah. I mean, everyone has their own personal Satan, as I like to say it. Okay. But I would say that in general, it's the interpretation of Satan as this, the rebel, the one who's willing to stand up for the underdog and to ask questions and not just, you know, bow to dogma and belief, but to think for himself. That's the metaphoric Satan that most modern Satanists today really uphold. But of course, there's all these different interpretations of Satan throughout the years, as I've mentioned, from this evil character that we know to the horror movie character.
Okay. Tell me where Baphomet comes in, because people have heard the term Baphomet. They've seen the image of Baphomet, the goat head on the human body. Tell people the origin of Baphomet and how it came about.
Yeah, so this is another reason why I did the book, because I know a lot of people, they might have a vague sense of, oh, there's this goat-headed symbol, what does it mean, or who's Baphomet? And I hope my book helps people to understand where that all comes from. So in the case of Baphomet, during the Middle Ages, the Knights Templar, they were viewed as heroes, and they built up a great amount of wealth and lands, but the French king grew jealous of all that and wanted to take back their power. So he accused the Knights Templar of worshiping this two or three headed goat headed deity called Baphomet, which may be a corruption of Mahomet or Mohammed, because once again, throughout history, people would deem those that they deemed enemies or sinners, like the Muslims, to be devil worshippers. And that's why maybe Mahomet became conflagrated with Baphomet. And so much later on in the 1900s, there was this occultist and illustrator called Levy, who created the Sabbatic goat or Baphomet image that many of us know today, with the wings and the goat head and the pentagram on the forehead. And this became a symbol of the equilibrium, the union of opposites of male and female, because you have the breasts and you have the human and animal figures. And this has became a really popular symbol for Aleister Crowley in his Thelemic religion and for the Satanic Temple with their activism. And it also became just a symbol associated with Satanism today.
Interestingly enough, too, when you talk about the Knights Templar and how they conquered different lands, they didn't necessarily conquer lands with force. I think a lot of people don't know this, but the Templar also negotiated with Muslims. And I don't think people know that. They negotiated. There were different tribes of Muslims that were friendly to Knights Templar. So nice. you had some that were at war with the Templar, and there were other that were friendly to the Templar. So some battles weren't necessarily battles. They were actually just negotiations. They would come into an area and they would talk. So that's why the Catholic Church believed that the Templar were actually conspiring with the enemy was because they negotiated, which is completely stupid.
And then again, you see this long history of people being deemed enemies and being stamped out and killed because they're associated with the devil and they're called Satanists, but really it has nothing to do with that. But I guess today, again, by taking back this label and honoring those that were rubbed out because of this association with Baphomet, that's a real sense of power.
Yeah. It's crazy how some things are misconstrued. But again, at that point, you have to remember too that the Catholic Church owed the Templar a lot of money, and they were, as you saw in the 1300s, were looking to get out of that debt as well. So they were looking for any excuse they could to try and get rid of the Templar. Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. I love the stuff you have about the Templar in there too. There's lots of stuff in this book, folks. And again, I'm not gonna spoil the entire book for you. But there's some interesting stuff as far as the history of Satanism that you definitely want to read, and some of the different misconceptions. Tell me a little bit before we leave people here, Carmina. Tell me a little bit about the Satanic Temples logo, which does have the star, and it looks like the head of Baphomet. But is there a torch that's coming up through the head of Baphomet?
Yes, that's the torch that represents knowledge.
Okay.
And that's in the original Baphomet drawing by Levy as well. Mm-hmm. And then my book goes through all the symbols too, the inverted pentagram. Levy also said that represented the devil because it looked like the two horns for the two pointed stars above and the beard below, if you were looking at an upside down star. Mm-hmm. And so the Church of Satan also has a logo that has to do with a goat head in a pentagram. And the Satanic Temple did their own version of that. That includes the Satanic Temple's name and original artwork. And that's also why, again, this history of the inverted pentagram of Baphomet has a long, long historical basis. And these symbols aren't chosen out of nowhere, right? They're not just cool looking edgy symbols, but they represent the history of what happened to the Templar and to the Freemasons that were also associated with Baphomet. And what Satanism is today, it's having these meaningful values that honor everything that's happened in the past.
So let me ask you this question here, Carmina, as we start to wrap things up. What do you believe is the difference as we sit here today in 2022 between in philosophy, between the Satanic Temple, the classic Satanist, LaVey Satanist, and someone who would more be like a Crowley Satanist?
Oh, I should note that Crowley never considered himself a Satanist. He was just called a Satanist by many people who didn't like him.
Okay.
But he had his religion of Thelema. But you're correct in that a lot of people associate him with Satanism, and many of his images and ideas did influence, especially the Church of Satan, such as his idea of do what thou wilt, be the whole of the law, and making the most of life's pleasures and using ceremonial magic to bend others to your will. And even just the look, the aesthetics really had an impact on Satanism today for Aleister Crowley. They all have such a different history and a different set of different philosophical background. And hopefully my book helps to explain that more.
Okay. And again, folks, if you want to go out and get that book, we have a link at the in the description of the show. Go ahead and click on that link, and we will take you to that book so you can go ahead and order it. It's a nice little succinct history of the of Satanism. It also gives you some nice descriptions as to some different things and different questions, and it not only answers them very nicely, but like I said, not only the history, but gives you some modern day answers as well as to what exactly Satanism is, which is nice, because we don't get a lot of modern day answers, Carmina, if you know what I mean, to a lot of things when it comes to Satanism. I think when we think of Satanism, we think of LaVey, and how would LaVey answer stuff, but we don't get a lot of current day answers as to how things are addressed from Satanism. And I think when it comes to the Satanic Temple too, we hear the news stories when it comes to the political battles, but we don't get a lot of understanding as to why these political battles are being fought, and that gets answered in this book as well. So I think that's very much appreciated as well.
Thank you.
So yeah, it wraps everything up in a nice little package. So I'd encourage people who have that curiosity, who want to learn more, to pick up the book, because it's all right there in that book. Again, the book is called The Little Book of Satanism, A Guide to Satanic History, Culture, and Wisdom. The author, La Carmina, who's been our guest here on the show today. Carmina, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And thank you as well. Folks, want to thank you so much for, again, another great week of shows and being with us this week. Want to remind you to take care of yourself and each other. By all means, folks, there are a lot of people out there right now in the Southeast who need your help in the Carolinas, in Florida, who have been through Hurricane Ian, who have been devastated by the hurricane, who need help. And there are numbers out there where you can text, who you can maybe just throw $5-$10 to, who need help desperately. There are organizations that are feeding people, that are helping with cleanup. Just do your friends here at Darkness Radio a favor. Reach out this weekend and do something to help those people. A lot of people are going through some hard times right now, and there are a lot of people that are going down there to help. So there's organizations out there that you can just do something. You don't have, you know, you may feel like you're trapped and you can't do anything in your everyday life. There's always something you can do. It may feel like there's nothing you can do, but by all means, just one little action can help somebody in a faraway place and can make somebody's life much, much better. So please help somebody this weekend. I know I'm going to, and I encourage you to do the same. Two websites to remember: officialtruecrimetuesday.com and darknessradioshow.com. The archives from 2017 to 2021 for True Crime Tuesday are available at officialtruecrimetuesday.com, and they're absolutely free. And anything you need to know about Darkness Radio is available at darknessradioshow.com. Check it out over the weekend. And again, I want to thank our sponsors for this week. Babbel, get up to 55% off your subscription when you go to babbel.com/darkness. That's babbel.com/darkness for up to 55% off your subscription. Babbel, language for life. And HelloFresh. Go over to HelloFresh right now, America's number one meal kit. You can get 65% off of your order over there. Go to HelloFresh.com/darkness65. Use code darkness65 for 65% off plus free shipping. Once again, that's HelloFresh.com/darkness65. Use code darkness65 for 65% off plus free shipping. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit. Want to thank both those sponsors this week for sponsoring Darkness Radio. And that'll do it. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week for another week, another great week of the best in paranormal podcasting. This has been Darkness Radio.